from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, San Francisco police need to better train officers to avoid racial bias. That's according to a report from a Blue Ribbon Commission created by San Francisco District Attorney George Gascon. The panel, formed after revelations that officers sent racist and homophobic text messages, blamed a code of silence that allows bias to go unreported. The report found that African Americans are disproportionately stopped and searched by police in San Francisco. We'll discuss the findings and criticisms, largely from the Police Officers Association, of the report as being too one-sided and politically motivated. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Yesterday, a Blue Ribbon panel of retired judges convened by San Francisco District Attorney George Gascon released a report examining bias in the San Francisco Police Department. The year-long inquiry concludes that the San Francisco Police Department has institutionalized bias and institutional weaknesses and is in need of urgent reform to build public trust. The 239-page report, which made 81 recommendations, has been strongly criticized by the San Francisco Police Officers Association. In this Forum Hour, we hear what's in the report and why it is in dispute. Let me tell you who is joining us. We want to first welcome our own reporter, Alex Emsley, KQED News. Good morning. Thank you for joining us, Alex. And San Francisco Supervisor Malia Cohen is here with us in studio as well. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we also want to welcome Anand Subramanian, who is the Executive Director of the Blue Ribbon Panel on Transparency, Accountability, and Fairness in Law Enforcement. And we welcome you to the program.
Thanks, Michael.
Glad to have you all here. And Anand, let me begin with you. And let me begin by just getting a sense of what particularly you want to put the spotlight on as far as this report is concerned. It's very wide-ranging. It takes up a great deal, as the title suggests. But particularly, we're talking about bias here. And just how does that bias manifest itself in terms of conclusions out of the report?
Thanks, Michael. So the report concludes that there is evidence of institutionalized bias in several ways, and that the structures and processes of the department are such that racial or other bias within the department would go undetected. And as an example, the first texting messages that came to light last year, as well as the second one, were both only discovered through unrelated criminal investigations of officers involved. These texts would have never come to light but for those criminal investigations that were outside of the city. So we looked at the processes that would allow for something like that to go undetected. And what we found were that throughout the topics that we looked at, and there were eight topics in the report, processes, systems, and structures are such that they're in dire need of reform.
You also found that the police have not been transparent. Now, we did invite the San Francisco Police Department. We also invited the Police Officers Association, and both declined to be a part of this morning's program. We wanted to have District Attorney Gascon, too, but he's on a plane. But lacking accountability and not auditing. These are really major things that I think people need to be aware of, and the report certainly brings attention to them.
Absolutely. And we found that San Francisco is actually an outlier among big cities in that it does not have an external oversight body that functions as that performs an audit function of the department. So the police commission does a great job of looking at individual discipline cases of over where a discipline of over 10-day suspension is recommended. And they look at policy in some regards, but their capacity is such that although they have the mandate to conduct audits, they have not been able to do so.
And again, we're talking with Anand Subramanian, who is executive director of the Blue Ribbon Panel on Transparency, Accountability, and Fairness. Let's also talk with you about, I want to get to some of the recommendations. There, as I said, are 81 of them, but there's a lot of talk about stop and frisk tactics and what they call hop-outs and this sort of thing, which again, get us back to bias. Clarify for us, if you could, what's going on here as you see it, as a committee sees it.
Sure. So the stop searches and arrest group, and that's the first chapter in the report, which you can download at sfblueribbonpanel.com, found evidence that certain officers conduct hop-outs. This was evidenced through witness testimony. And what that means is they sort of triangulate around a person of color in neighborhoods like the Tenderloin, and they jump out of the car and sort of conduct a quick pat down and then jump back in and leave. So when our finding is really that certain members of the department conduct stop and frisk activities of this nature. And I want to be clear that this report is not about individual officer conduct. It's not about individual officers at all. It's really about whether the text message scandal that came to light last year was indicative of institutionalized bias within the department.
But the other main catalyst for this was the Mario Woods case, was it not?
No, we were actually in the middle of our investigation when Mario Woods was shot and killed by the police in December.
So it didn't carry over into the ongoing investigation?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely it did. So use of force and officer-involved shootings was another chapter. It's chapter 3 of our report. And so what that group found was that the use of force policy was severely out of date, out of best practices. I think it had last been updated in 1994. Of course, recently, the police commission approved a new use of force policy that's currently in negotiation between the city and the POA. But, you know, I think the problem, though, is that we have evidence that members of the department conduct activities like stop and frisk, hop outs. But what we really found was that there's no way the department's not really keeping track of that. So no one's holding these officers accountable. It's quite possible management or leadership at the department don't even know about it. And so what we recommend is that we need an agency such as an Office of the Inspector General that many other major cities have that would really be in charge of auditing what the department's policies are, whether they're up to par, whether they're in the 21st century, and whether the department is holding officers accountable for complying with those policies.
Inspector General would mean more transparency, presumably. It would also mean more accountability.
That's our recommendation.
And you want recommendations also with more auditing, because the auditing has been not as accessible as it should be, or in some cases, maybe non-existent?
That's right. We found a huge lack of transparency. And what that really means isn't that necessarily that the department is trying to obscure facts or data. It really means that the processes and systems are such that sometimes the department's not collecting data the way it should be. When it does collect data, that data is rarely accessible to the public. It's often poorly maintained or organized. Further, that data is rarely analyzed. And when it is, and recommendations come out of that analysis, those reforms are rarely implemented.
Although I want to bring Jim Dudley into this, and let me mention that Jim Dudley is joining us. He's retired deputy chief of patrol with the San Francisco Police Department, now teaches criminal justice classes at San Francisco State, and is a consultant on police practices. But Alex Emsley, let me go to you first, because there have been some of these reforms already put into place. There have been some corrections and types of reform.
For at least, I would say, all of 2016, the San Francisco Police Department and the sort of bodies that oversee that department have been undergoing a major era of change. There have been major policies passed through the policymaking body that governs the police department, the police commission. Probably the two most major ones are policy governing the implementation of body-worn cameras for police officers, the rollout of which should start, as I understand, next month in a couple of SFPD stations. And as Anand mentioned, rewriting of the department's use of force policies, which was a major undertaking and took several months. And there was a lot of input, including, I think, from the Blue Ribbon Panel and other groups. I think that policy is an update, whether or not there are certain pieces of it that people may dispute. And we haven't seen the final policy that is being negotiated right now. But it has been a major change.
As I said, I want to bring Jim Dudley into this. Alex Emsley is a reporter for KQED News, and Supervisor Malia Cohen is also with us. Jim Dudley, there's been a lot of criticism of this report. I want to get to that with you. Police Officers Association, Martin Halloran, says it's biased. It was a kangaroo court, a charade. He didn't exactly pull his punches here. He even brought an analogy to what happened in Dallas and said George Gascon is aiming at police officers right in the wake of Dallas and police being shot. Let's get your response to this. I mean, first of all, are we talking about something that really needs to be criticized here as the creation of the district attorney and therefore not having the integrity of three judges who did this work for free?
Good morning, Michael. I understand what you're saying, and I understand the criticism, and I actually agree with some of the criticism in that this was a closed process. It was driven by, as I understand it, the district attorney. A lot of people that weighed in on the report had already had opinions formed or had expressed views, including some of the judges, on police bias and racism. And it's ironic to me that they broad stroke the whole department with this classification of racism and bias when it's sort of the opposite of what they're looking for. It reminds me of a grand jury where it's one-sided, it's driven by a prosecution, and there's no exculpatory evidence. That is, there's no evidence for people to challenge the veracity of some of the issues brought forward or the testimony of individuals. And I understand that many individuals asked to speak before the panel and were refused to do so.
And there were also criticisms about those who were critical, who reported to the committee essentially doing it anonymously. Are you aware of that?
No, I haven't really been following the process. I read the executive summary, and I know that this is not the ideal way that policy is made, by bringing in only one side of the stakeholders in the argument. And as far as policy making goes, when you talk about the use of force policy and being outdated, I really wonder what parts of the use of force policy are being challenged. When San Francisco, like many other agencies across the United States, follow the use of force policy as dictated by the penal code, the California Post training, and by the Constitution, by the Supreme Court rulings on the objective reasonableness of the officer on the scene. So when we also talk policy, we talk about bringing several people into the mix. And when you look at the taser issue, that's something that's been on the table for 4 years at least. So this report sounds like it's focused on the police department, highly critical on the police department. I think the oversight that's being asked would essentially do what's intended, freeze the department, pull back aggressive policing, pull back officer-initiated contacts. The contacts, these jump outs or whatever the term was used that I've never heard before, and stop and frisk. I wonder if anybody's ever linked these either detentions or consensual encounters with gang injunctions or officers being able to articulate that they know the person that they're stopping, that they either suspect them of having warrants or being on probation or parole.
We're talking, if you've just joined us, about the Blue Ribbon Panel report on bias in the San Francisco Police Department, which was released yesterday, and Jim Dudley's on the line with us. What about the fact that the report says there's a code of silence in the SFPD, Jim Dudley?
Well, I think that goes to management, and the chief and command staff really need to hold captains and lieutenants accountable for everything that goes on under their command. So San Francisco's broken up into 10 district stations, 10 district captains who oversee lieutenants, sergeants, and patrol officers. And as a captain at Park Station and Central Station, if I was aware of anything, I actually sought out officers who were not doing what they were supposed to do. Then you ferreted them out and you charged them, brought them up for discipline.
Jim Dudley again with us by phone, retired Deputy Chief of Patrol with the San Francisco Police Department, now teaching criminal justice classes at San Francisco State and consulting on police practices. I said I want to bring Supervisor Malia Cohen into this. Just can I get a quick response from you, though, Anand, in terms of these charges of one-sidedness and like a grand jury? And
absolutely. So, you know, I dispute all of those assertions, and those are really some POA talking points, that the process was one-sided. We interviewed several officers furnished by the POA. We interviewed president of the POA, Martin Halloran. We interviewed Paul Chignell, who works for the POA. All of these POA representatives were people that were afforded the same treatment as all of our witnesses. And
they did, by the way, condemn the text messages. In fact, Halloran called them despicable. I just wanted that on the record. Yeah,
sure. But this notion that the panel A was closed or had any preconceptions, I think, is absolutely false. These are three judges with over 75 years of experience between them. You know, eight law firms involved, some of the best minds in the city that had absolutely no preconception about what to expect when they conducted their investigations. Tens of thousands of pro bono hours, and so to say that, you know, these objective investigators had any idea of what they would find or had a goal in mind is totally false. I also want to push back against the idea that the district attorney directed this. He had absolutely nothing to do with it from the time that he initiated the panel as an advisory body.
Well, the POA is saying he was thirsty for media coverage. He did this for political reasons. That's been their argument all from the beginning almost, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, you'd have to talk to the DA about his reason for this. From our perspective, he established us as an independent body. We were autonomous and independent. We saw no evidence that the DA was doing this for political reasons or for media coverage. Frankly, I think that, you know, the DA, he's stated on the record that this probably was, you know, in terms of his political ambitions or media coverage, this probably was very harmful for him. So I think that he really did this from our perspective, as far as we could tell, for exactly the right reasons. And that was I think that was established by the fact that he did give us, you know, he did ask us to act independently and autonomously. So the DA acted as a witness as well. And like other folks did. I think what the POA is suggesting is that, you know, we interviewed over 100 witnesses, some key high-level city officials we asked to reiterate some of their testimony in a public setting. The POA wanted their officers to be invited to testify at a public hearing. We invited President Halloran to testify at two public hearings. He declined both times. And the fact is, we did not want the POA to dictate who the panel determined was needed to be heard in a public forum.
All right, I want to get into this some more with Alex, but first I want to go to Supervisor Cohen, who I know has been waiting patiently to join in the conversation here. And Malia Cohen, who's a member of the Board of Supervisors, I mean, your district includes Mission and Bayview, and there's been certainly a lot of talk from the committee and a lot of talk in general. I mean, it's in the report, people in your district saying bias, assuming they're gangbangers, rousting them, hassling them, all that sort of thing. I mean, can you give us your perspective?
Sure, but I only have a few minutes today. I mean, thank you for covering this. This is absolutely incredible. My compliments to the Blue Ribbon panel and what this report has done. It has brought people who are not normally talking to each other to the table to begin to address a myriad of challenges that are systemic and endemic inside the law enforcement period. What these reports, because there's also the civil grand jury that had a report that came out just last week that really mirrors many of the findings that the Blue Ribbon report is that it's highlighting, is that it quantifies and it also qualifies anecdotally the stories that I hear from my constituents time and time again, stories that we see playing out not only in San Francisco, not only in the Greater Bay Area, but the entire country. I represent the Bayview, Pechura Hill, and Visitation Valley neighborhoods, and those are high crime and intense areas. The Blue Ribbon report indicates something that I think it's very critical that we need to pay attention to, and that it indicates that bias can be institutionalized when it's promoted, condoned, or acquiesced by departments, policies, practices, or culture. And that is what we are calling time out and calling a foul on. We need to begin to change these systemic processes and thinking. And the way you begin to do that is by talking about it, analyzing the data, and having thoughtful conversation to begin to, and accepting our shortcomings.
Analyzing the data, if you can get access to the data.
If you can get
access
to the data.
It's a big part of the report. Yeah.
It is a part of the report. Another significant part of the report is oversight and ensuring that there is a capability to audit police policies and procedures within the department, which is why I'm bringing legislation this November to do exactly that.
This is your ballot measure, too?
This is the ballot measure that's coming before voters in November. Now,
do you want to qualify that a little bit for
us? Sure, I'd love to. So one of the strongest recommendations from the Blue Ribbon panel was oversight, an oversight section that would create an inspector general's department, a department that has the capability to audit the policies and procedures of the department. And I believe I've created a charter amendment that will satisfy this recommendation, allowing a department, which we're going to be naming the Department of Police Accountability, that will have that authority to come in and audit. Audits are very critical. Alex talked about the civilian oversight that exists already. I think San Francisco's done a tremendous job in that respect, civilian oversight with the police commission. But what admittedly Alex acknowledges is that the auditing component of it is what's missing. And so that is what I'm bringing to voters, to allow this department to come in and make these types of audits and implement the changes that need to happen.
And those changes, according to Ladoris Cordell, who is one of the three retired judges on this committee, are all implementable. I'll invent a word. I mean, there are 81 recommendations here, and she feels that with the political will, they can all be implemented. And that's certainly a sanguine view of things. You would concur?
I absolutely concur. And that political will exists. I think what's important that we do not take these reports and these different findings and put them on the shelf and let them collect dust. What we have done is we've started the process, like Alex mentioned, all of 2016, we've been implementing police reforms. And this is something that the mayor's office has been instrumental in, the police commission. And let's not forget the community, the people that are protesting, those that are organizing, people that are showing up to police commissions day in and day out, NAACP, Black Lives Matter. There's been united fronts from both the mission as well as the Bayview. I mean, it's just been a tremendous amount of momentum that tells two sides. We have reports and we also have anecdotal reports from
the
street.
Let me just ask you about the anecdotal. I mean, you're hearing from your constituents about lack of trust in the police. I mean, is this a fairly pervasive sort of thing that comes to you?
Oh, absolutely. And it's something that we've been hearing about for generations. I mean, my parents who grew up in San Francisco talk about the strain between the African-American and not just the African-American, but also all communities of color and with law enforcement. And I think it's also important to connect the dots that it's not just in San Francisco, but it's something that's pervasive across the entire country. You see people protesting in Israel. You see people protesting in European countries, people of color who are feeling the pressure of a biased system.
We're talking with Supervisor Malia Cohen, also with Jim Dudley and Alex Hemsley and Anand Subramanian, and we can, in fact, talk with you. We'd like to hear your thoughts about the Blue Ribbon Report, the panel report on bias in the San Francisco Police Department, which was released yesterday. And as the supervisor said, it certainly ties in with many of the stories that, unfortunately, we've been reading about nationally throughout the country. If you have some thoughts, please feel free to express them here. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we welcome your calls. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Again, you can join us toll-free right now at 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I particularly encourage police officers, and you can be anonymous, to join us, members of the force, because we did ask the SFPD to join this program. They declined, so did the POA, the Police Officers Association. We want to hear from anybody who has a stake in this, so feel free to join the program. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. And we welcome you back to Forum. We're discussing a Blue Ribbon panel report on police bias released just yesterday. Please give us a call if you'd like to join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. And you can also email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And I wanted to bring Alex Hemsley back into this, who is reporter for KQED News. There's been a lot of sparring back and forth by the POA and, those who are, let's say, on not necessarily so much those who wrote the report, but those who are certainly on the side of the report. We've been hearing talk about censored testimony of officers who disagreed with George Gascon. We've been hearing talk about comparing the police union to racist 1950s police in the Deep South. I mean, a lot of this is pretty charged, to put it mildly, and radioactive. How much of this really, from your perspective as a reporter, just really gets into the thick of politics?
Well, and I think we've seen an escalation in the rhetoric over the past year, certainly. A little bit of brief history. I mean, I don't think anyone in this room has forgotten, but District Attorney George Gascon was the chief of police in San Francisco for a little over a year, about a year and a half.
Which prompted Quentin Kopp, a former judge and San Francisco supervisor, to say, is Gascon investigating himself? I mean, it's an interesting query in some ways.
Yeah, well, and in some ways, I mean, that was several years ago, and now we have the situation that we have, which is George Gascon is the district attorney, and he is not the head of the police department. He had a fairly public and out-in-the-open feud with the former chief of police, Greg Suhr, over several issues, but a lot around these issues of accountability and just processes and how the police department sort of interacted with the prosecutorial arm of civil government, the city. So I don't know. I mean, this feud has been growing. I think it's interesting that Mr. Subramanian mentioned Martin Halloran didn't give public testimony when invited to the Blue Ribbon panel. The POA did get its lawyers to depose several leaders of that organization in video depositions, where they talked about the culture of the police department and some of the questions that would likely be brought up, but also told, you know, anecdotes about a time that they had been with George Gascon and accused him of making racist remarks. So there was quite a bit of a public back and forth that just sort of continues to escalate. I don't know if peace between these two organizations is on the horizon.
Well, on the horizon are our callers, and let's go to them and find out what they have to say, and let's have you weigh in. Pat, you're first up. Morning.
Good morning. I'm happy to see that Supervisor Cohen did mention that they're using anecdotal evidence to show that racial animosity occurred, but they don't show that it does not occur by the same type of evidence. You know, I'm over 60 years old. I've lived in Chicago, Oakland, San Francisco, and I've been involved in altercations where the police have been called. A couple of times I've been armed when the police came, and a couple of times I've been involved in fist fights where white men were laying down in the street after the fight, and I was a victor. But I've never experienced racial animosity from any of these policemen. They've always been respectful, always been polite, and I think it's a lot of how the person who encounters them behaves. I know that there are aberrations, but for the most part, I think that we're castigating these police for things that really do not occur. We need to hear from the other side, and we need to be able to have this in a way that we aren't threatened when we go to these forums.
Pat, I thank you for that call. And let me go to you on this, Jim Dudley. I should mention here that there were a number of minority police officers who disagreed with the report. Sergeant Tracy McRae, who is an LGBT member of the LGBT community and also an African-American, said she has never experienced any homophobia or racism in her work. Inspector Clifford Cook also gave testimony to that effect. How do you sort this out, Jim Dudley?
Well, when you do research and when you make policy, anecdotal evidence is really one of the weak links. I agree with these officers who say personally what they've seen. I understand what some of the others on the other side of the argument say what they've seen, but as anecdotes, those aren't very strong. When you catch 14 officers tweeting back and forth to each other these, you know, racist remarks, that's deplorable and they should be dealt with. But again, to paint the entire department with this broad stroke and say that it's, you know, respectfully to the supervisor, to say that it's institutionalized and there's tacit approval and nothing's being done to address it, I strongly disagree with that. I mean, I worked with 32 captains when I was a captain. I worked with commanders and deputy chiefs through six or eight different chiefs, including Heather Fong and Alex Fagan and Earl Sanders. And it was not tolerated. And if it was and you were caught, you were disciplined as well. There's vicarious liability that carries all the way up through the chain. So in short, anecdotal evidence is fine. But if this panel's relying on anecdotal evidence from individuals who may or may not have an axe to grind or have something not go their way during the department, they want to get some sort of information to this panel. I've seen it before on the grand jury. I've seen people lie to the grand jury, and there's nobody there to catch it. There's nobody to refute that evidence, nobody to give a defensive posture.
Well, Supervisor Cohen, you want to say something?
Yeah, I think actually the caller, Pat, is pretty accurate, and I would agree. I think that there are phenomenal examples of men and women, Sergeant Tracy McGee being one of them, in law enforcement. I believe that the report is not focused on the good, but their focus on where our weaknesses are. And when I made my comment about anecdotal stories, these are the stories that you're hearing from that I hear from constituents on a daily basis that are stopped. And there is now data, although I am pushing and have passed some legislation to require SFPD to be a little bit more dogged and thoughtful in the collection of data so that we can analyze it more thoroughly. But that you've got the Blue Ribbon Panel, you've got the civil grand jury, you've got the report from President Obama's 21st century policing. I mean, there are serious reforms and discussions that are happening. So I think it's naive to say that naive to not acknowledge the excellent policing that does happen within our department. But we also need to recognize where our shortcomings are and address them.
And if I may, Michael, sorry, yeah. I think that the report really
Susanna
does.
Susanna Subramanian. Yeah.
Thanks. The report really does acknowledge the excellent work of the many great police officers within the department. And we certainly had a wonderful experience with all of the officers that were willing to cooperate with the investigation and that we spoke to. And, you know, the report absolutely does not rely on anecdotal evidence. I think that's actually the value add of the report, is that if community members look at the findings and recommendations or the executive summary, they may say, oh, I already knew all of that. That totally corroborates what I already knew. Mm-hmm. Or they may say, I completely disagree with that. But the report actually has the data and the evidence to back up those findings.
The POA, however, did say the testimony of officers who disagreed was censored? They actually used that word, censored.
Yeah, that's absolutely incorrect. We interviewed Officer McCray. We interviewed Officer Cook. Their testimony was incorporated into the report, into the culture chapter. And I think what the POA is referring to is that they wanted those officers to be able to testify publicly at a time when we had already wrapped up our public hearing. So we made that determination that we weren't going to host a public hearing just for the POA officers.
All right, I'm going to host more of our callers. We'll go to you, Duane. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes. One of the things I wanted to bring up is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is – hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is that a lot of police force are here to protect the innocent, but with all the shootings and these incidents, they're moving the burden of risk to the citizenry. And we pay them to take the risk, the pause. That's what we're paying them for. And what is generally happening is they're shifting that burden now to the citizenry. And I just like to have that addressed. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Question of burden on the citizenry, Alex?
Well, I think what the caller is referring to is really what we would broadly categorize as use of force, right? And when is it appropriate for an officer to use force versus not? And I want to go back to a little bit about what is anecdotal and what is statistical here and what the differences in those are. It is well known, talking about racial bias, that San Francisco has one of the largest disparities in arrests, stops, and searches of really any jurisdiction in the state of California. It has been incredibly high for a long time. That meaning, if I can translate for a second, that people of color are much more likely than their percentage of the population to be arrested, stopped, or searched.
Disproportionate. The numbers are there.
Yes, in San Francisco, and that's been for at least a decade that I've been paying attention to. That has been the case. There are explanations for that that the police department has given as well as others. But what is sort of missing from an ability to analyze statistics is well-collected stats on uses of force, when a police officer may use their baton, use their gun, and on whom that force is being used. And I think the panel did try to look at that, but I don't know the extent to what their conclusion was based on statistics.
Let me bring another caller in here. Susan, that's you. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for having this show. I just wanted to make a comment. Yesterday, you had someone on who was a police officer, and he was talking about the work that he does, Michael.
That was Norm Stamper, who was former chief of police in Seattle, yeah.
Right, and I thought it was really amazing what he was saying, so I hope that the council member and your panel can hear about him. But my comment was that I'm concerned about the timing of the release of this report, and also just having the show today. In today, you know, President Obama and the Vice President are at a memorial in Dallas, you know, for the fallen officers in law, and the law enforcement, you know, family right now is totally grieving. So I guess what I'm concerned is that the people that need to hear this may not be able to take it in right now.
Well, I thank you for that comment, a very thoughtful and important comment, particularly in light of what Martin Halloran said by way of criticism. He said, you know, this is like lighting a fire to a tinderbox because things are so volatile right now. And Anand, can I go to you on that?
Sure. Well, I just want to thank the caller for that perspective. I think it was really important. We certainly didn't try to coordinate the timing of the release of this report with that incident. It was, you know, it sort of shocked us all, but all of the incidents last week in Louisiana, in Minnesota, and in Dallas. I do want to say, though, that, you know, we think that to build trust with the community, which I think is really what's important here and what was underlying all three of those incidents I mentioned last week, we need a department that's transparent enough for the public to hold it accountable. And what we think is that this report provides a roadmap to build that trust. It provides recommendations. So I know it's challenging, and, you know, I feel like one of the inflammatory aspects of that quote from the POA is that that this report is a criticism of individual police officers, that it tries to find fault or cast blame. That's absolutely not the purpose of the report. One of our attorneys, Ray Marshall, said yesterday, the purpose of this project was to support the police department, not to undermine it. And well, I hope it's seen in that light.
Here is some pushback from one of our listeners, and mentions you, Supervisor Cohen, so let me go to you on this. This is Rick, who writes, I hear many complaints from Supervisor Cohen about the police. What I know is that there are terrible crime problems in San Francisco. My youngest daughter said that the smashed glass we passed yesterday while driving along the panhandle was from a robbed car, which is an epidemic lately. My oldest daughter lived in the Mission for 1 year and witnessed 2 murders on her street. So pick on the police and watch your crime spiral. They have the toughest job in our society, the terrible job of cleaning up our failed educational system. Also remember that in New York, the plummeting crime rate under Rudy Giuliani came from aggressive police intervention, including stop and frisk. It's interesting the caller should mention Rudy Giuliani, who made a statement yesterday or the day before about 99% of African Americans. It was an extraordinary statement. I mean, an extraordinary intemperate statement about the possibility of 99% of African Americans being falling into crime or some words to that effect. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But this is often a position that you must hear. The crime rate spiraling out of control, police are the line between that crime in many instances and the warding off and prophylactic of that crime.
Correct. I would agree. And I even with the person that wrote the comment, my comments don't come from a place of anger or hatred, or actually, quite honestly, I have a fantastic relationship with law enforcement. My relationship with law enforcement in San Francisco as a representative of the Southeast neighborhoods is very complex, and I am looking for fair, accurate, and policing. I work very well with law enforcement. As a matter of fact, the Bayview station is going to be one of the first stations where body cameras are going to be rolling out next month. And so certainly been instrumental in making sure that we're bringing and highlighting good practices to our law enforcement. I've protected SFPD's budget to ensure that they have the resources, tactical resources that they need so that they are safe on the street. I've support increasing police academy class, bringing the number of police academy classes so that we can get our police department up to the 1971 level of funding. I've been incredibly supportive of Chief Sir and now Interim Chief
when he was under fire by Black Lives Matter and so forth. Yeah.
When he was under fire, when he wasn't under fire, when he was the Bayview, when he was the Bayview station, Paul Chignell, when he was a captain of one of the stations that I was was supervisor of. So I mean, people are trying to frame me in an unfair light and cast aspersions that are inaccurate. I have a very good relationship and a relationship that I'm working on with the POA. But I think it's important that we continue to acknowledge what these reports and findings are saying and not live in denial that we do have a serious problem that needs address. And that's not to say that it should be compensated or that we're ignoring smash and grab crimes. I mean, that is absolutely another critical portion of policing, and so that San Franciscans feel safe while they're on the streets, on the bus, or in their homes.
And it is, I think, correct to call it an epidemic, as that particular emailer did. I'm wondering, though, looking at some of our other responses from listeners, Anand Subramanian, Sarah tweets, how can citizens participate in police reform efforts? Mm. Good, important question.
Absolutely. So I first want to say, you know, we talk to a lot of community members in San Francisco, and there are very well-organized community coalitions. So I would certainly recommend that you look at that. You know, there across the city, there are Justice for Mario Woods Coalition, Justice for Alex Nieto Coalition, and I think Supervisor Cohen mentioned they've come together as a Black and Brown Coalition. These are coalitions that are volunteer, community-led, and are always looking for new allies and members. And so that's a place to start if you're a community member. If you have a specific expertise, you know, please feel free to email sfblueribbonpanel@mto.com, and be happy to guide you maybe to where your expertise could lead you. But if I could just comment on the last caller or the last I'm not sure if it was a text or a call, but you know, this report really isn't about picking on the police department, and we actually think that the recommendations, if implemented, will allow the police department to function more efficiently and focus on crime.
Alex Ebsley.
Well, there are also – I just wanted to mention a few other ways that people can participate. There are weekly meetings in the evening of the San Francisco Police Commission that sees a lot of civic participation. So that is another way to participate in sort of the city government aspect of policing. Obviously, the Board of Supervisors has a public safety committee and holds many hearings on these kind of things. And the police department has neighborhood community meetings that any members of any neighborhood can attend there. Sort of community meetings for their station captains. But I also wanted to bring up this idea of the report by the Blue Ribbon Panel definitely does go out of its way to say that it's talking about institutional issues and not trying to sort of single out individual officers. However, from the officers that I've spoken to since this came out, I mean, it's really not being taken that way by them. Individual officers do feel like even if the criticism is sort of more general to systemic issues, they feel it and they take it personally, and their families are affected. So it's something to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. I have to say in the same breath, though, there are jurisdictions that have proven that it is possible to be more transparent, to be more accountable, to do constitutional policing, and to lower things like property crime and violent crime.
I wanted to clarify that comment by former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani. What he said was Black victims were 99% likely to be killed by another civilian, most often another Black person, and only 1% by police. What would you say to that, Supervisor Cohen?
Well, I would say that approximately 40% of the people arrested here in San Francisco are African-American when the African-American population is less than 5%. And I would push back and say that all lives have – they have – black lives – lives have a value, whether SF – or whether law enforcement are taking the lives or whether they're the lives of regular civilian everyday people. Both need to stop.
I need to read also a message from the mayor's office in response to this Blue Ribbon Commission that we've been talking about, Blue Ribbon Panel, I should say. And this came from Deirdre Hussey, who is Director of Communications. She says, "We encourage the collaborative efforts of all agencies and individuals that are coming to the table with the city to move forward our justice and police reforms. We thank the Blue Ribbon Committee for their efforts. We're making critical investments to rebuild trust with our communities and are changing how our police officers handle conflicts." Jim Dudley, what sounds like the mayor's office is on board here. You want to respond?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I do want to comment on a couple of things that were just said. Number one, on the statistics that Supervisor Cohen just talked about, the 44%. I think it's unfair to say San Francisco residents because we're such an open Bay Area that those statistics don't count in people from outside the county. They don't talk about people that are arrested multiple times, and part of that is due to our justice system and the fact that they're back out. As far as how you can volunteer to be part of reform, I didn't hear San Francisco Safe and neighborhood watches that you can join to work with the police and neighbors in your community. You can go to San Francisco Police Citizens Academy and learn more about how the police department operates. And I think that's a big problem in that there's a mystery that a lot of people don't understand why and how police do what they do. And I think that would bring a better understanding. As far as statistics gathering goes and transparency, you have San Francisco as one of the smallest non-sworn to sworn ratios in the state. So that means San Diego, that has well over 500 civilians working, crunching data, doing statistics, and all those other things that are being asked for by the Blue Ribbon Committee are done by a significantly less number of civilians in San Francisco, or they're being done by police officers in uniform. So when you have a call for statistics that aren't routinely kept, sometimes sworn police officers are dedicated to bring up those statistics and bring up those reports. So, I mean, there's a lot of things with meaning behind it. When you talk about transparency, sometimes San Francisco police is limited to what they can give. And I'm sure everybody on the panel knows about Police Officers Bill of Rights, signed in the late 70s by current and former Governor Jerry Brown. And it shielded a lot of public information from police officers' files. You have the Brady List. You have two Brady Lists in San Francisco, one by the police department and one held by the district attorney's office. And I saw that as a criticism when the district attorney has never given their criteria for Brady List and has never given, as far as I know, a list of the officers on their Brady List. That is, people not trusted to make arrests or testify or things of that nature. So as far as transparency goes, there's a limit to what you can do with the personnel you have, and there are legal limits of what you can give. Copley Press is a Supreme Court ruling that says that administrative investigations, administrative trials, unless the accused officer asked to have them public, they cannot be public, and the news media is not entitled to sit into those.
Again, Jim Dudley is retired Deputy Chief of Patrol with the SFPD, and Sally is calling us from San Francisco. Sally, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. This is an anecdotal story, but perhaps revelatory. I'm a 5 foot tall, 100 pounds, in my 60s, white woman, teacher. In a discussion about suicide at a San Francisco high school, an English as a second language class, misunderstood and thought the teacher was going to commit suicide. Over a dozen police cars came to the school. Over a dozen officers interacted with me. And what I was struck by was half of the officers, their overreaction was just absurd, handcuffing me, forcing me to the ground, arresting me, whereas the other half of the officers were thoughtful, kind, understanding of the situation. There seemed to be a lack of a definitive protocol in dealing with what was obviously a severe misunderstanding. And it struck me that had I not been a white woman, things might have been different. But most importantly, there seemed to be a lack of commonality in protocol dealing with the specific situation. Perhaps you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, it's certainly, as you say, a revelatory story, and I thank you for bringing it to our attention. I don't know who wants to jump in here. Response, Alex? No? Anna?
Well, Michael?
Yeah, Jim Dudley.
So I don't know what the call came out as, if it was somebody threatening suicide armed. Police often respond to those types of suicide attempts where blue suicides attempted, where you try to get police officers to do the dirty work, if you will, for you, that you produce a gun and they shoot you, and then that's your suicide. So maybe the preliminary responding officers looked at the threat aspect first, what type of weapon, secure the individual, and then use calming techniques. And
Jim, what struck me in that call was the division among the officers themselves, which one, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on the incident, can frequently see. And it brings up, once again, I'm looking at tweets here and listener emails and so forth, the whole question of the code of silence. When there's something that occurs like that, and it occurs in an unfortunate vein, often those police officers who don't agree with use of force and so forth.
Can I jump in? And
remain
think,
silent. Yeah, Supervisor Cohen.
I think what the caller also did was she gave us another example of how important it is. I don't know what county or what jurisdiction she was
she
in.
She called from San Francisco.
She called, but I don't know where her interaction was, if it was SFPD. But it's important that we also that we train our officers to respect and understand time and distance when they're coming into a situation to be able to quickly process what is happening. And time and distance allows officers that opportunity. And that, again, is crux to the social justice police reform that we're trying to implement.
Let us leave it there. Good place to leave it. Let me extend our thanks to those we talked to this hour, Anand Subramanian and Executive Director of the Blue Ribbon Panel. Again, it's on transparency, accountability, and fairness in law enforcement. San Francisco Supervisor Malia Cohen, Alex Emsley, reporter for KQED News, and Jim Dudley, retired Deputy Chief of Patrol with the San Francisco Police Office Department. I thank you all for joining us, and thank you, our listeners, and remind you, you can continue this discussion online at kqed.org/forum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Engineer is Annie Bringer. Engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our executive producer, Joanne Wallace. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.